It is 11:01, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Between the Covers. I'm your host this morning, Lisa Loving, and we're really thrilled to be joined live in the studio with Katie Arnoldi, who's an incredible novelist, and her she's touring behind Point Doom, which is her newest book. It's her third novel, and this people are saying this is her best one yet, and there's so many issues colliding in this novel that are really important in Portland, Oregon, even though it's set, the book is set in Point Doom, of course, near Malibu in Southern California. Southernmost tip of California, is that right? The next landmass is Antarctica or something crazy like that, Katie?
Point Doom?
Yeah.
No, it's kind of central south, Southern California. Yeah, there's San Diego's down below it, so we're not that far south. But yeah, the issues that we're dealing with in Malibu are national issues with the pot farms and the cartel activity. And so while this does take place in a very small area, it addresses topics that are happening all over the country.
Indeed. Yeah. And thanks for being here today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
Are you going to be speaking tonight?
I am doing a reading at Powell's on Hawthorne at 7:30 this evening.
Powell's, Hawthorne, 7:30. Katie Arnoldi's first book, Chemical Pink, you may have heard of her. She's a very famous bodybuilder. Her second novel, The Wentworths. And if you put her name in a search engine, you pull up this hilarious story that I'm going to embarrass her a tiny bit now, that the New York Times, that the Los Angeles Times wrote about how when she and her husband decided to decorate their houses. And that's the thing that's so funny about when you look at these hard news issues. This is a book, it's about drug legalization. It's about immigration. It's about the environment. And it's about being a single woman who's getting older and wondering who you are. These are the issues that are part of our lives. But then you try to dig in, do art about it, and it makes you wonder who's paying attention sometimes. But this is an incredible book, Point Doom. And Katie, I wanted to start out and say, how did you come to write this book?
Okay, so I initially started writing, I had this idea that I was interested in about native and invasive species. And in Malibu, particularly, when I grew up there, it was a blue-collar community. And all my friends were the daughters and sons of electricians and plumbers. And it was very rural, very isolated, and kind of paradise as far as I was concerned. In the last 20 years, I've watched this tremendous change as the rich people have moved in and bought up huge plots of land and built these giant mansions and stripped the hillsides and put up their vanity vineyards. And the impact it's had on the native species, the original inhabitants, has been pretty remarkable. So that was the book I started to write, and it was going along great, about the, you know, the rich and the poor. And then one morning I was out on a hike, and I ran into this Ranger Bob, who I love, and we were chatting about the wildlife and whatever, and I said, finally we ran out of stuff to talk about. I was like, so Bob, what else? He's like, well, you know, cartel, Mexican drug cartel. I was like, what? And he told me that the cartel is growing in Malibu, in the backcountry in Malibu, which was completely shocking to me. I knew that there were large grow sites and public lands up and down the California coast, but I didn't realize that Malibu, which is a tiny, tiny, tiny little backcountry, very small wilderness area, that kind of activity was going on there. So I dropped everything and spent a summer researching the cartel, grow sites, how marijuana is grown. I actually then also had to get eight kinds of marijuana and smoke all eight kinds because I wasn't a pot smoker and felt I needed to know everything there is to know about pot.
Did you remember it? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
No, it was funny, actually, because I had big plans to take notes every time because I had, you know, like the daytime pot to the heaviest stuff you can possibly smoke. And I kept planning on taking notes, and then I'd get stoned and was like, oh, I wait, forget notes, whatever. Anyway, so that was one side of the research. The other side of the research was figuring out how to get into these cartel grow sites, and it was pretty hard. But I managed to worm my way onto this civilian team that goes in with law enforcement and breaks down the infrastructure of these grow sites and takes out all the toxins, the poisons that they're using. I worked with them for 2 weeks on something called Operation Locust. And it was really dangerous. We had armed United States Park Police with us because these were active sites, active cartel sites. So there were people out there, armed people out there. And we got to fly in Black Hawk helicopters, which was about the most thrilling thing ever. But what I saw in the course of the research to build this character, Felix Duarte, in my book, completely shocked me, because the cartels are growing on our lands, our designated public lands that we have designated that to, you know, maintain the pristine quality of national parks, et cetera. They're out there, and they are using the most toxic poisons that we don't even have here in the United States, the rodenticides and the pesticides. And so what I saw in the course of the research for this book really, really upset me. And I'm, it concerns me that it's something that we aren't hearing about much in the news. Anyway, so I went out and did this and saw firsthand how the pot's grown by the cartel, how the whole setup is. And then I came back out and sat down and wrote this book, incorporated this theme into Point Doom, this idea of native and invasive, and what happens when you put all these different people together in a small community and ask them to coexist.
And this is KBOO Portland. This show, Between the Covers, we're live in the studio with Katie Arnoldi, who's traveled up here from Southern California, behind her book Point Doom, a new novel. And she's going to be speaking tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne at 7:30, did we say?
Yes.
Give us a sketch briefly just of the plot of the book.
Okay. My favorite character, Ellis Gardner, who I couldn't decide if she was a man or a woman, so first, she was. I named her Ellis because I could go back and forth with, and it took a while to decide the gender. She's kind of both. She and her best friend Pablo grew up at this in this beautiful paradise that is Point Doom, and in the course of their lifetime, the rich moved in, and Ellis had to sell off most of the property that her family owned, and was able to hold on to a little postage-sized piece of property in a little cottage where she lives. Pablo's family sold, and he lives in his van. He makes a living by poaching the cartel grow sites. He sells the pot to the rich family up on the hill who has the Vanity Vineyard, the Baines. Frank Baines' wife stays loaded from morning till night to cope with her husband's enormous ego and his dreams of being this Robert Mondavi or whatever, famous vintner. And then there's Felix, and Felix is a character who he's actually a character that has moved me more than any other that I've written thus far. He is from a small village in Michoacan. The cartel comes to him and tells them they'll bring him across for free, and in exchange he will live on one of these sites and bring a crop to harvest of pot, and they'll give him a lot of money, and then he can go back down to Mexico and marry his sweetheart, Violeta. So he's brought out of Mexico and dropped in the middle of nowhere. And this is a young man who has never left his village, doesn't speak English, is not educated, and family is so important in the Mexican culture. And he's dropped in the middle of nowhere. He's scared to death, and once they bring him up here, they tell him that, oh, by the way, your sisters and your mother back home, if anything happens to this crop of weed, if anybody comes and steals it, if you take off, anything like that, we will rape and kill all three of them, and then we'll find you. And what Felix knows is that this is true. They do it. He's seen it. So he's out there in the middle of nowhere by himself and scared to death, armed. And in the course of my research, these are the kids that are out on these cartel grow sites, and that's another element of danger that people don't necessarily know about, and it's a real concern of mine. So it's those five storylines and how their lives interact.
This is so remarkable because in the past week or so, as I was mentioning in the lobby, Dan Rather has aired a report about human trafficking that describes Portland as being a major center for human trafficking. There's actually an amazing group of Catholic nuns from the Seattle area that have been organizing on this issue for 10 years. And a lot of the times they're looking at girls, they're looking at women and girls. But just like you said, you know, as we start digging into this issue of immigration and the hysteria right now, the violent hysteria of immigration and build a wall across northern Texas and southern Texas. My son once said, "Come on, Mom. If they built a wall across northern Texas, you wouldn't complain, would you?" Anyway, but, you know, these issues. And yet here is a story that, you know, many novels actually illuminate reality more effectively than newspapers can. But we're looking at these issues of exactly how do many people come over that border? Why do they come over the border? And also, what is the culpability of the ownership class in that? One of the things that the Catholic Sisters in Seattle have been working on the past 2 years is how to reduce demand for girls that are basically sex slaves. And like you said, you're talking about young people who didn't even know that they were coming up here for that purpose. They're enslaved by other people, criminal cartels. And they're being, victimized by the white people and the criminal cartels. So can you talk a little bit more about people's attitudes, too, when you bring this up?
Well, the thing that struck me and upset me the most about our border policies is, you know, we've constructed this wall, this 800-mile wall, and it has cut down the illegal migrants from coming across in populated areas. But what we've essentially done is, like, for instance, I was down in San Diego, Tijuana area, and really looking at that border wall. It's four layers thick in certain areas. But then if you go out into the desert, the really harsh desert in California, there is no wall there. You can go across there, but then you have 20 miles of the most extreme conditions to get across before you're going to get to water. And the same is actually even more so true in Arizona. So what we've done with our border policy is funneled these people into the most hellacious deserts, and they're dying on U.S. soil. The hypocrisy of our policy is that we say to them, we're going to make it as hard as possible for you to come across. But if you make it, if you survive the crossing, there's lots of work up here. We need people to pick our food and to wash our dishes. There are jobs. So, you know, and the migrants that are coming across, the vast majority of them, this is not the cartel is not responsible for everyone who comes across. These are poor people who need to feed their families and will do anything. And they're not necessarily very educated, and they don't necessarily understand the conditions they're getting into when they go across these terrible deserts. I have a friend, John Carlos Frey, who's made a fantastic documentary called The 800-Mile Wall about this subject. And he interviews these migrants, and they'll have, you know, a quart of water. And he'll say, so, you know you're going to be walking for a few days, and there's no water out there. And the attitude is, it's fine. I'll be fine. I'll make it. They're not making it. Almost 6,000 documented deaths have happened on U.S. soil in the last few years. There's another area down in northern San Diego County, actually it's Imperial County, where a waterway called the All-American Canal runs across, and it acts as a liquid border down there because there is a border wall, but it's easily, people get across it. And then to get into the U.S., they have to swim across the All-American Canal. Over 657 people, I think, have drowned thus far in the All-American Canal, and yet we, the U.S. government, refuses to put safety devices along the canal so people can get out when they start having trouble, because the attitude is they know it's illegal, they're not supposed to come across, and so they're drowning in the All-American Canal. The water goes to northern San Diego County. I don't think people are aware of how many people are dying in their water source. So many people are drowning that they have a special crane for plucking bodies out of the All-American Canal. And I've been to the county lots where you see row after row after row, hundreds of unmarked graves, and it is so upsetting. And nothing is being done about this, and we're not talking about it enough. This is part of our policy. So the reason I know all this is in the course of research for my book and this character, Felix Duarte, I opened all these doors, and I've gone and into a lot of dark territories in my books, really dark ones, but I've always been able to walk away when the book was done. This character has haunted me, and I can't walk away. So I've scrapped my next book, and I'm going to write about this because I can't. I need to give it a face, and I hope that by giving it a face, maybe it will heighten awareness for people what the problem is. Mm.
We are live in the studio with Katie Arnoldi, her newest novel, Point Doom, looking at issues of immigration, drug policy, pot farms, human trafficking. And she's going to be speaking tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne at 7:30. But now here's another issue that really gets me about, because, you're talking, Point Doom is actually a nature area in Southern California. Most people think there's nothing but freeways in Southern California, but that's not accurate. But Southern California is an interesting place because you have this, it's almost like a tectonic plate of affluence and poverty that grind against each other, and also where you have the racism issue that crops up that makes it, it just magnifies everything. And we've been reading in the newspaper about the surfer, Robert Burke Simpson, who was stabbed to death on a beach in Santa Barbara by, 22-year-old alleged gang member. And, you know, basically, and this has been in the New York Times, this happened in April. And basically, it's freaking people out in Santa Barbara because they're so accustomed to the surfer culture. You know, all kinds of people are surfers anymore. And this book actually really delves into that in the most amazing way, Point Doom. My nephew is a surfer in San Clemente. I was already mentioning that. But there's all kinds of stereotypes about surfers, and surfers are territorial also. But the beaches are becoming gentrified, so you have stockbrokers and rich people who are going to the beach. And who's to say that everyone shouldn't love nature? But then you also have families who, you know, you have Vietnamese families, you've got Latino families, everyone sharing the same zone. And I know my nephew, and he'll tell you, he makes me crazy sometimes. You know, he's got friends that are Spanish-speaking. He speaks Spanish, but they'll all drop everything to try to beat up another group of people that they don't know if they show up at the beach. And he tells crazy stories about big fights, even as his surfer group also does environmental work. Is it called Surfrider Foundation? Anyway, so can you talk a little bit about what's happening with the gentrification
yes.
of the waves?
That's I'm so glad you brought that up, actually, because, okay, so when I grew up on Point Doom, if you were part of the tribe there, it was a wonderful place to be, and I was, so it was great. But in those days before lawyers and lawsuits, an outsider would come in, and there's all these different spots where you could surf, and but the best spots were the Outer Reef and the Point. And if you're an outsider, forget it. Don't even try and paddle out there because you would be beat up. That's just how surf culture was. This is in the 70s. And then the face of Malibu changed, and the rich moved in. And they got themselves a pair of Uggs and some trunks, and they hired a surf coach, and they bought a $1,000 longboard. That was before. Now they buy themselves I have no idea how much they cost, a stand-up paddleboard, and they get their paddle, and they get their little coach, and they get out there. And stand-up paddling, I don't know if you have it up here in Oregon. In Southern California, it's like a gondolier. They're standing up in essentially a boat, and they can take off way outside and come in, and they steal all the waves from the surfers, and there's this huge uproar going on Point Doom. In fact, meetings, and they're posting rules on the cliffs down there.
I'm looking at your face, and you're really mad.
Well,
you're mad.
Am I?
I think so.
I think it's my character. I'm speaking
okay.
for my character.
Okay.
Anyway, so, and what I've seen happen is the people that are taking up this stand-up paddling, they call them SUPs, stand-up paddlers, they're wealthy, entitled people. They're not used to, they never learn the etiquette of surfing. They don't understand about the pecking order. They're not used to being denied anything that they want. And so there's a real clash in the water, going on between the original surfers and this new breed of people that are coming in. And it's kind of amazing to me, actually. And I stopped surfing, by the way, because I couldn't stand it. It made me too tense. So I don't surf out there anymore
too
at
tense.
All.
I remember in the New York Times, I want to say it was 3 years ago, they had an article about, especially I feel like in Malibu area, Santa Barbara area, the old trailer parks where people could live, and it was like affordable housing, but how the gentrification of the trailer parks were bumping up the cost of trailers to, they were looking at $250,000 trailers and stuff like that. And the question was, where are the real people going to live? That was just completely fascinating.
Well, yeah, exactly. Same in Malibu. There are two trailer parks. There's one at Paradise Cove, and there's one on Point Doom. And it's $1 million trailers. They have spectacular views. And they're trailer parks. And that is the only affordable housing in Malibu at all. So actually, the people that work in Malibu don't live in Malibu anymore for the most part. Unless they got in on the trailer parks early, they've been driven out because it's so expensive.
Mm. Yeah. We are live in the studio with Katie Arnoldi, her newest novel, Point Doom. She's going to be speaking tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne Boulevard at 7:30. And that's a really wonderfully intimate space with lots and lots of books. There's quite a community around Powell's on Hawthorne that's different from the one on Burnside. Since we're speaking of communities here, talk just briefly a little bit about your first two novels. Chemical Pink is actually really pretty famous, and then The Wentworths. Talk about Chemical Pink.
Chemical Pink is a Pygmalion story told in the world of women's bodybuilding, and it got a huge amount of attention because it came out just before the whole steroids and sports uproar happened, and I don't think people were really aware of what steroids do to women's bodies, and it is pretty horrific. And I don't know if you know, women bodybuilders to look like that doesn't happen in nature, that those big ropey muscles and all that stuff. That's just not what women's bodies do. So they use steroids to grow those kind of, which is a male hormone. And what happens, and this is an open secret. Well, it was an open secret. Now it's not a secret. It's everybody knows this. As you use steroids to grow muscles, women, you also develop secondary male characteristics. The difference between men and women is that with a man who uses steroids, when he stops, the muscle will go away and he will return to his natural state or whatever it was before. With women, when they stop using steroids, their muscles will go away also, but they will retain the deepened voice, the beard, the chest hair, and there's dramatic changes that happen to their genitalia also. So it really is kind of this Frankenstein thing that happens in women's bodybuilding. And it was I did a little stint as a bodybuilder. I weighed 111 pounds. No, I did not use steroids. But I was in there with all these women that did, and I made a lot of friends, and I really infiltrated this very weird and dark subculture and was able to write a novel about it. And I think it was pretty shocking to people. In my mind, it's a literary novel. It's about obsession and control. And there's this man that sponsors this young bodybuilder and really does control her through money and drugs and manipulates her own ambition. So that's what that book's about. And then The Wentworths is kind of it's about the destructive and redemptive nature of family. And it takes place on the west side of Los Angeles. It's a rich family, the Wentworths. But it also examines other family structures. There's the housekeeper, and she's had to leave her five children at home in Guatemala. There's the mistress of Gus Wentworth, who is Honey Belmont. She's from Colorado City, which was the polygamist enclave out in Utah, Arizona border. So I went out there actually seven times because I felt I needed to know everything there was to know about polygamists. Talk about dark. And anyway, so it's all different levels of family and what kind of impact, the negative and positive impact of family on people. And it's dark. And I think it's quite funny, frankly. but actually, I did an interview on that book, and at one point the interviewer said, wait, you think this is funny? So my sense of humor is different from some people's. And then Point Doom. And someone pointed out in the course of my book tour, I hadn't thought of this, but all three books address a similar theme, and that is the corruptive power of money on people. In all three books, there are people with wealth who manipulate and kind of control people that have less than they do. And I think that's a theme that I keep coming back to because I can't get over it.
We are live in the studio with Katie Arnoldi. We've been talking about her newest novel, Point Doom. She's going to be speaking tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne at 7:30 p.m. She's a novelist. Katie, we only have about five more minutes, but here's the thing that, I mean, I'm from California, but I haven't been there since I was really young. I've lived in Oregon almost 30 years. When you look at trends in the United States, cultural trends, political trends, population trends, in so many ways, Southern California is the fountainhead of a lot of what people in the United States think of as maybe, like you said, dark, commercialism, Hollywood. Even, you know, the Westboro Baptist Church is going to be here in Portland next week. And they would say, you know, God hates fags, and they probably blame Los Angeles. Haven't there been evangelists who say, you know, earthquakes in Los Angeles because it's so hedonistic? I want to ask you this. It's true that when you look around at other places, like we were just talking about how so many of these issues are also, they're coming to the fore in Portland, Oregon, which is about as un-Los Angeles as you can believe. Do you think that that's true? Do you think that that there's something strange about Los Angeles, and it's like all these tectonic plates of wealth and yet race and class? I mean, What is the ethos of it as a place? I mean, as a writer, you're talking about the politics of place. Yeah. Where does it all come from?
You know, so it's funny because when I think of Los Angeles, I don't think of it as a central place. I think of it as a series of islands, really. And the Hollywood Island is completely separate and different from the second book. The Wentworths were these waspy rich people that look down on those crass Hollywood people, and that's a separate island. And I actually grew up with those people, so I really know what I'm talking about. And they look down on, and so that's a separate island, and it's all these different little islands. And living in Los Angeles, you know, it's very isolating in a way because of these isolated groups, and there is no really cohesive center to Los Angeles. So that's how I think of it, and the influence of Hollywood on every, I mean, as a writer, certainly in Los Angeles, if you say you're a writer in Los Angeles, they assume you're a screenwriter. There's no really literary center. So, I can't speak to Los Angeles itself because for me, Los Angeles as a entity doesn't exist.
It looks different when you're close up
away. And it is, like I said, it's these little isolated islands of groups of people, and they don't necessarily intermix.
Well, so tonight you're going to be at Powell's at 7:30, and you're going to be in a room full of Oregonians. A lot of Oregonians come from California, but they don't want anyone to know. So you're going to be dealing with that vibe, you know, oh, here comes California. In a minute and a half, What do you think you're going to be doing tonight at your book reading? Reading from the book, talking about issues. What do you think you're going to do?
You know, I think what I'm going to talk about a lot tonight, because I know that there is a Normal is a co-sponsor of the event tonight. And so I plan to talk a lot about the cartel sites and what's going on with pot and why I think pot should be legalized. I'm coming from strictly from an environmentalist standpoint. But that's going to be my focus, I think, this evening. It's I have a lot to say about it. So.
Wow. I know that there's going to be a lot of people that are very interested in hearing that, because that's another thing when you look at pot legalization, and we only have a few seconds left, but we're seeing that where people have objected to the use of marijuana and marijuana legalization on ethical grounds or moral grounds, it's really the economy stupid that's coming down and tearing those walls down. So that's going to be
true.
A completely fascinating discussion.
Yep.
And when those walls do fall, and it is going to be an issue of how the stuff is grown, what are the standards going to be, and what are the unintended consequences of, like you said, all the chemicals that are used. So just want to say, Katie Arnoldi, author of Point Doom, thanks so much for being with us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And you should be at Powell's on Hawthorne tonight at 7:30. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned.